When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Forever Dog.
Welcome to Forever Dog. You can listen to this podcast ad-free on Forever Dog Plus by signing up at foreverdogpodcasts.com/plus. And make sure to follow us on social at Forever Dog Team and check out all of our podcasts at foreverdogpodcasts.com. Thank you for your support and enjoy the show.
Forever.
Welcome to Public Domain Theater with Kelly Nugent and Lindsay Kaytai. This week, The Monkey's Paw by W.W. Jacobs.
Welcome to Public Domain Theater, the podcast of highbrow readings and lowbrow commentary. I'm one of your hosts, Lindsay Kaytai.
I'm another one of your hosts, Kelly Nugent.
And we are here with no one. We are here with my dog, Edwin.
Edwin
the dog.
Mr. Edwino.
He is grumbling. He might need to go out.
He is grumbling.
Then my boyfriend can take him.
He looks like a corn dog. The way he's laying is so like cylindrical.
Who's a little pumpkin spice latte?
Oh my gosh, his little tummy when he's breathing. Excellent work, Edwin. Excellent work. Excellent tummy work.
Yeah. So I have a cute dog. We're at my house. We have no guest.
Yeah.
Living it up.
Yeah. Our shoes are off.
Our shoes are off.
We're sitting on couches.
This place is air conditioned.
Yes. Ooh. AC.
We would have been in that studio.
Boiling our butts off.
Oh my God.
Here's the thing.
Yes.
There's a heat wave right now.
Yep.
Which I know it's like all we talk about, but like.
And you probably saw on Twitter, but you guys.
I don't think you get how freaking hot it was.
It was 114 degrees last Friday in Burbank.
No, honey, I will tell you, I was driving.
Honey, what?
At one point.
Honey, yes?
I drove through Burbank because I had to go to, I was going to go to Hyper RPG on Friday.
Uh-huh.
It was 120 degrees. And I saw a guy on a motorcycle driving by and he was like wearing the motorcycle protective gear.
Uh-huh.
In the elements. 120 degrees.
Oh my God. I hope he's okay.
I think he's, you know, he gave me a thumbs up. I rolled down the window and I was like, is it safe for you to be wearing that gear during a heat wave? And he
said, yes, it is.
He said, it is, ma'am. And I'm so glad we speak in the same way.
Oh, I listened to your episode where you unfroze a caveman.
Oh, yeah. They love me.
They love me.
But it was hot and then couldn't even do the show at Hyper RPG because our infrastructure doesn't support it. And there was a blackout and their internet went down.
Yep. There you go.
So we're not baby
heads. It's too darn hot.
It's freaking hot out right now.
It's really bad. Now it's gone back to 90 and the whole of Los Angeles is like, cool 90.
I know. I've just been blasting my AC like crazy. I have it on at 65 degrees because it's a wall unit. And so I'm just like, blast it, baby.
Yeah.
Do it. So we're currently climate controlled. We're living that life. And we're reading a story called The Monkey's Paw. I actually didn't know who this was by, W.W. Jacobs.
I sort of just thought it was like a fairy tale.
I thought it was like a folk tale or something. Like something that parents
tell
kids.
I thought it was
kids.
Just like it got passed down. Like, yeah.
Are you familiar with this story? This is what I know of the story.
Uh-huh.
A person gets a monkey paw.
Mm-hmm.
They buy it from like a shady proprietor.
Yeah.
I feel like
I'm just
like
picturing that Simpsons episode.
Yeah. And I feel like maybe there's like considering that
the
this
frozen
is an
yogurt
old story.
Is haunted.
1863. Oh, I'm sorry. No, this is when the guy was born. But, you know, olden times, 1902.
That's pretty old.
I feel like maybe there's some Orientalism things going on. Like they buy it from like a
not be surprised.
Yeah. And then they can get wishes and then they wish for something and it's not what they thought.
It's not. Well, they're getting it, but not in the way they wanted it.
Yeah. So that's what I know of the story. I don't know any of the specifics.
I am looking up Simpsons, Monkey Paw. The Monkey Paw Nightmare.
Also, wouldn't we call it a monkey hand? I'm just like, you know.
Don't monkeys have paws?
I feel like they have little hands.
Yeah, maybe.
A paw to me is like a rock and four jelly beans.
The monkey's paw is Lisa's nightmare. Story has the Simpsons visit Morocco. Yeah, they wish for things. Yeah, and everybody's wishes are fine except for Lisa's.
Well, we'll see how true to the story the Simpsons
were. Let's see if Lisa gets what she wants.
Yeah. Now, okay.
But it's got one of the best, or not, there are many bests, but a famous, funny Simpsons part where Homer tries to buy evil frozen yogurt. Anyway, you guys have seen it. You know, Simpsons. We all know it. We love it.
We all know it. We all love it. WW Jacobs, what do you think WW stands for? Did you look already? Don't look.
I didn't.
Close your eyes.
I'm not looking. I don't cheat.
You don't.
I'm not a cheater.
No, you're very honest and fair.
I am. I'm overly so, maybe.
Overly so. WW, what do you think?
Worldwide.
Yep. Mr. Worldwide. Dale. Yep. This is written by Pitbull.
Cool.
No.
I bet he's a good writer. Is he a good writer?
No idea, but I know he's great vibes.
Great vibes. Some of the top 10, like maybe top 10 vibes.
Yeah. Top 10 vibes. Mr.
In
Worldwide.
Human history.
Yeah.
Not just now.
Yeah.
Not just current human vibes.
Pitbull. Is up there with Nelson Mandela.
Definitely. Obviously.
I think it's Nelson Mandela.
I think whenever I think of Pitbull, I think of Nelson Mandela and vice versa because like their work was so intertwined.
You can't have one without
the
other. You
can't. It's like, it was such a partnership.
And also, who's holding up who? We never know.
No.
Incorrect. William Weimark.
Oh. I always get those four words confused.
William Weimark Worldwide. William Weimark Worldwide. Weimark.
Oh, it sounds like a Hollywood agency.
Yeah, it does. William Weimark Worldwide. Okay. He was born in London, 1863. His father, wharf manager at the South Devon Wharf on the Thames Estuary.
Oh, check you out, WW.
WW. Whatever the wharf required, his father managed it.
Wow.
1879. After graduating from college, he works as a clerk in a post office. Wrote short stories in his spare time. Most of his... I can hear Brett saying this sentence. So Brett's not here.
Brett's not here. He's not in my apartment. He's out of town.
But most of his stories were humorous. Okay, I'm going to try and say it in a Brett voice.
Okay.
Most of his stories were humorous in nature, and his favorite topic was marine life. Is that a Brett voice? Brett.
I'm trying to pick. I haven't quite gotten a...
Basically, he wrote funny stories about sailors. I'm going to try and read this as Brett. Okay, ready?
Okay.
Okay. Only Brett will know if this is real. I guess people that know Brett and Brett.
Yeah, and Brett's fiance.
And Amy, yes. Most of his stories were humorous in nature, and his favorite topic was marine life. Basically, he wrote funny stories about sailors.
Okay, I hear it.
Many of his stories and characters were based on things that he had directly observed as a kid while accompanying his father on the wharf. Titles include many cargoes, the skipper's wooing, sea urchins, captain's all, night watches, and sailor's knots.
You're losing it.
I'm losing it because I can't do the list. Because
now you're doing like a man and
a guy. Okay, hold on. Hold on.
Ooh, I'm a guy.
Okay, hold on. I'll get it back.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. However, the story for which he's best remembered is the classic horror tale, The Monkey's Paw. You know what? He's not writing in his voice here. When he writes in his voice, I can do it.
You did
the,
have
the
it again.
The stories were humorous in nature. Well, his favorite topic was marine life.
Brett is a very subtle...
He's a subtle guy.
There's not like a... I don't think everybody that Brett knows has their Brett, you know?
Yeah,
their Brett impression down.
And that is why that is my golden crown. I must get it.
Brett is the pinnacle of being able to do an impression.
Yes. Okay.
Yeah, there's not like a thing you can really grab on, but good try.
You know what? I will say that those two lines that I did, most of his stories were humorous in nature and his favorite topic was marine life. Basically, he wrote funny stories about sailors. That pretty good. I think that was pretty good. Yeah. I definitely lost it later.
You did. I'm not gonna bullshit you.
In 1900, he married Agnes Eleanor Williams, a feminist and socialist. You go, WW.
Good job, Pitbull.
Good job, Dale. Jacobs's philosophy was conservative.
Why does this always happen to us? Get so excited at the first detail.
Oh, man. Even though the marriage suffered from irreconcilable political and social differences.
Oh, man.
They had two sons and two daughters. Okay, I'm going to try again with the Brett.
Okay.
Right here, it's...
It's another Brett sentence?
Yeah.
Okay.
A slightly built man, pale in complexion and retiring, Jacobs was no literary lion. I lost it.
I see what you were doing.
You see what I'm doing?
I see what you were doing.
He's a measured speaker.
He's a measured speaker.
And he goes up sometimes.
With an upglide.
Yeah.
Deep but quiet.
Okay, hold
voice.
On. I'm going to imagine myself as Brett.
I love the impression we're giving to
I'm imagining. Okay. He avoided publicity, keeping to a small circle of friends, including the illustrator of many of his books, E.W. Kimball.
Is the including how he'd say it?
No.
That's Kelly.
It's not. That's Kelly.
That was pure Kelly.
Illustrator of many of his books, E.W. Kimball. Though a successful writer, he never put on airs. And then this is just Jacobs died on September 1st, 1943. I don't know how Brett would announce someone's death.
we haven't heard it happen just yet.
No, I can't wait though. Crossing my fingers.
It's a known.
There is no indication in any of his online biographies of how he died.
What?
This is in italics. Brett
thinks
this is very important.
It's because he made a bad wish.
because of the monkey's paw.
That's what I'm saying. He made a bad wish. He wished for the perfect.
What if we get a ghost from this?
He wished for the perfect woman. And then she was a socialist.
And then he was like, this isn't what
I
want.
Like, that's not what I wanted. I wanted a blonde.
I wanted, gentlemen prefer blondes.
I wanted Marilyn Monroe.
Okay, ready?
Little known fact, she was socialist.
He would not have been happy then.
I don't know. She wasn't.
Actually. Oh, dang.
Just saying.
Wouldn't that be a fun
Who
twist?
Knows? I don't know enough about her.
Ready?
Yes.
The Monkey's Paw by W.W. Jacobs. Part one. Without, the night was cold and wet, but in the small parlor of Laburnum Villa, the blinds were drawn and the fire burned brightly. Father and son were at chess, the former, who possessed ideas about the game involving radical chances, putting his king into such sharp and unnecessary perils that it even provoked comment from the white-haired old lady knitting placidly by the fire.
Well, hell.
Even she was talking, and she hadn't spoken for 14 years.
She was a skeleton.
Hark at the wind, said Mr. White. Who, having seen a fatal mistake after it was too late, was amiably desirous of preventing his son from seeing it.
Oh. Wait, what?
Oh, my God. Okay, so dad makes a mistake. And he tries to distract his son. He's like, oh, the wind.
Oh, and then he redid his move?
No, he's just trying to, he like realized his mistake. So he's like trying to distract the son from like looking at the board too much and seeing it too. So he's like, oh, pay attention to the wind. So windy.
Good move, Dad. Nice try. We'll see if it pans out.
I'm listening, said the latter grimly, surveying the board as he stretched out his hand. Check.
Oh, I think he saw it.
I should hardly think that he's come tonight, said his father, with his hand poised over the board. Mate, replied the son.
Oof. You suck at chess, Dad.
That's the worst of living so far out. Bawled Mr. White with sudden and unlooked for violence. Of all the beastly, slushy, out of the way places to live in, this is the worst. Paths a bog and the roads a torrent. I don't know what the people are thinking about. I suppose because only two houses in the road are let, they think it doesn't matter. Never mind, dear, said his wife soothingly. Perhaps you'll win the next one.
You sore loser. You get mad at your house. So bad at losing, you hate where you live.
Mr. White, he is projecting all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. White looked up sharply, just in time to intercept a knowing glance between mother and son. The words died away on his lips and he hid a guilty grin in his thin gray beard. He's like, ah, they got me.
Oh, you got me.
They know I'm such a bad loser.
We're family.
We're fun family.
When you're here, you're family. Olive Garden.
There he is. Said Herbert White, as the gate banged to loudly and heavy footsteps came to the door. Oh, I'm sorry. As the gate banged to, loudly and heavy Wait, what?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Said Herbert White, as the gate banged to loudly and heavy footsteps came
towards
God,
the door. Oh, my God, Kelly. Oh, my God.
I can't do it.
Wow.
Help. It's
wow.
Because Brett isn't here, refusing to make eye contact with either of us while we scream at
his
him.
His shoulders shaking as he laughs silently.
You know, isn't
like a little, like our little Santa.
Isn't that the best Santa gift is Brett's shoulders shaking with laughter?
Yeah.
That's the thing we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's the best. I'll just imagine it. You know, next time I come over here, Lindsay, I expect that you have built a little machine that
Let's
looks like
make
Brett laughing.
Mike do it.
We'll make him do it when he comes
we'll
back.
We'll make him turn, not say anything, and just shake his shoulders when he thinks something's funny, which is never, because he doesn't laugh.
The old man rose with hospitable haste and, opening the door, was heard condoling with the new... Condoling with the new arrival. The new arrival also condoled with himself. So that Mrs. White said, tut, tut, and coughed gently.
Condole.
The sun is like, I can't fucking tut, wait
tut.
Till I can
it
move
out. It looks like rain.
Tut, tut. I fucking won, Dad. I won, you lost. You're old. And coughed gently as her husband entered the room, followed by a tall, burly man, beady of eye and rubicund of visage.
Oh.
Sergeant Major Morris, he said, introducing him. The sergeant major shook hands and, taking the proffered seat by the fire, watched contentedly as his host got out whiskey and tumblers and stood with a small copper kettle on the fire. At the third glass, his eyes got brighter. Oh, and he began. You
know, cut to the third.
Yeah, cut to the third.
Nice.
He's just like silently drinking and they're just like watching.
Yeah.
They're like, wow.
Wow, you drink whiskey so well.
You drink so much.
Oh, a third helping? Mm.
We're almost out. There's a storm. We can't leave. The little family circle regarding his eager interest, this visitor from distant parts, as he squared his broad shoulders in the chair and spoke of wild scenes and doughty deeds of wars and plagues.
Doughty deeds.
Strange peoples.
Oh, good.
21 years of it, said Mr. White, nodding at his wife and son. When he went away, he was a slip of a youth in the warehouse. Now look at him. He doesn't look to have taken much harm, said Mrs. White politely. I'd like to go to India myself, said the old man, just to look around a bit. I told you, Orientalism.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Man, I'd love to go to India and gaze at people who aren't white.
Yeah.
And go, how do you live like that?
How do you live so not white?
Oh, it's weird.
Better where you are, said the sergeant major, shaking his head. He put down the empty glass and, sighing softly, shook it again. I should like to see those old temples and fakirs. I hope I'm saying that right. And jugglers, said the old man. What was it that you started telling me the other day about a monkey's paw or something, Morris?
Oh, this is another, like...
He's going to tell the story.
Gather around, I'll tell the tale, and we don't... Why do we even need to talk about these people? Why can't we just see the story unfold? Why does it have to be told to us by the character?
Oh, because he's... I think maybe he's going to give it to them.
Oh, okay. Well...
Well, maybe not, actually. We'll see. Jump the gun. We'll see. Nothing. So there's soldier
nothing,
hastily.
Nothing, la la.
Least away is nothing worth hearing. Monkey's paw.
Did you see?
Said Mrs. White, curiously.
Tut, tut.
Well, it's just a bit of what you call magic, said the sergeant major.
It's nothing. It's just a mystical object on which I grant wishes. It's hardly worth talking. Where's your whiskey?
I would like more whiskey. I don't want to talk about this object imbued with the souls of 5 million. Okay. The three listeners leaned forward eagerly. The visitor absentmindedly put his empty glass to his lips and then set it down again. His host filled it for him again.
Good work.
To look at, said the sergeant major, fumbling in his pocket. It's just an ordinary little paw, dried to a mummy. He took something out of his pocket and proffered it. Mrs. White drew back with a grimace, but her son, taking it, examined it curiously.
Stuck it in his mouth, sucked on it some.
Re-moistened it until it looked as if it were alive. It had a spell put on it by an old fakir, said the sergeant major, a very holy man. He wanted to show that fate ruled people's lives and that those who interfered with it did so to their sorrow. He put a spell on it so that three separate men could each have three wishes from it. His manners were so impressive that his hearers were conscious that their light laughter had jarred somewhat.
"Well, why don't you have three, sir?"
said Herbert White cleverly. The soldier regarded him in the way...
Cleverly?
Yeah.
It's not that clever. Okay.
It's just a question. It's not that clever.
Yeah.
It's just a...
Why don't you...
Why don't you do it?
And so everyone's clever. Like, oh, how clever.
Oh, your wit.
The soldier regarded him the way that middle age is wont to regard the presumptuous youth. "I have," he said quietly.
You fucking idiot.
Why the fuck do you think I'm here drinking all your whiskey? And his blotchy face whitened. "And did you really have the three wishes granted?" asked Mrs. White. "I did," said the sergeant major, and his glass tapped against his strong teeth. "And has anybody else wished?" persisted the old lady.
"No, no, I wished, and now I'm stuck in this fucking house with you guys.
I just wished for shelter.
I wish to be someplace fucking warm. Now here's fucking home with you fucking idiot."
"The first man had his three wishes, yes," was the reply. "I don't know what the first two were, but the third was for death. That's how I got the paw." His tones were so grave that a hush fell upon the group. "If you've had your three wishes, then it's no good to you now, Morris," said the old man.
Gimme.
"What do you keep it for? Gimme.
Gimme.
I want you.
I want my little paws on that paw.
I want paws on paws." The soldier shook his head. "Fancy, I suppose," he said slowly. "I did have some idea of selling it, but I don't think I will. It's caused me enough mischief already. Besides, people won't buy. They think it's a fairy tale, some of them. And those who do think anything of it want to try it first and pay me afterward." "If you could have another three wishes," said the old man, eyeing him keenly, "would you have them?" "I don't know," said the other. "I don't know." He took the paw and, dangling it between his forefinger and thumb, suddenly threw it upon the fire.
Good work.
Oh, White, with a slight cry, stooped down and snatched it off.
Wow, he believed in that magic right away.
Instantly. I would have just been like, nah, it's going to smell now.
Okay.
Not my house.
That was a weird story.
And then why throw it in our fire? Just throw it outside.
What is this little play you're putting on?
I would just be like, should I clap?
Better. How did you learn all those lines?
Wow. "Better let it burn," said the soldier solemnly. "If you don't want it, Morris," said the other, "give it to me." "I won't," said his friend doggedly. "I threw it on the fire. If you keep it, don't blame me for what happens. Pitch it on the fire like a sensible man." The other shook his head and examined his possession closely. "How do you do it?" he inquired. "Hold it up in your right hand and wish aloud," said the sergeant major. Don't tell him.
Don't tell him. You just told him it's wrong.
Just be like, you have to dance around and then sit on the floor.
Yeah.
Like, just make something up and then it won't. Like,
happen.
It won't happen.
Everything's fine.
"But I warn you of the consequences." "Sounds like Arabian Nights," said Mrs. White. Oh, God.
Oh, I feel like I'm in my very own oriental tale.
I would love if the son was like, "You're being racist, Mom." As she rose and began to set the supper. "Don't you think you might wish for four pairs of hands for me?" Mom.
Oh,
bitches be cooking. Mom's cooking. She needs some help in the kitchen.
Mm.
Everyone ignored him because they were men. Her husband drew the talisman from his pocket and all three burst into laughter. Rude.
Ugh.
As the sergeant major, with a look of alarm in his face, caught him by the arm. "If you must wish," he said gruffly, "wish for something sensible." Mr. White dropped it back in his pocket and, placing chairs, motioned his friend to the table. In the business of supper, the talisman was partly forgotten.
Business of supper.
"Hi, welcome to my seminar. I'm Chef Shefton. I'm here to teach you the business of supper. Potato on a plate and a slab of meat on a bowl."
"Do you know how high your profits can climb if you have a bowl of clam chowder?"
"Hey, all you have to do is invest in seafood. Triple what you put in, triple what you get out."
Mr. White dropped it back in his pocket. I already said that. And afterward, the three sat listening in an enthralled fashion to a second installment of the soldier's adventures in India. Dude, this guy's just got to leave.
Yeah.
He's just got to go.
It's all stormy.
It's stormy.
It's all stormy and shit.
Oh, my God. Well, he has to like forbid them from making wishes.
Yeah.
I mean, he's not going to.
I just want to get to the part where these people are being tortured.
Me too. "If the tale about the monkey's paw is not more truthful than those he's just been telling us," said Herbert as the door closed behind their guest, just in time to catch the last train. Lots of jump cuts.
Mm.
"We shan't make much out of it. Did you give anything for it, Father? Inquired Mrs. White. She calls him Father. He probably calls her mother.
Oh, yeah.
Regarding her husband closely.
I know the type.
Yeah. A trifle, said he, coloring slightly. He didn't want it, but I made him take it. And he pressed me again to throw it away. Likely, said Herbert, with pretended horror. Why, we're going to be rich and famous and happy. Wish to be an emperor, Father, to begin with. Then you can't be henpecked.
It's not sensible, you asshole.
I don't like the son.
No.
I hope he gets punished first. He darted around the table, pursued by the maligned Mrs. White, armed with an antimacassar. You know what that is. Uh-huh. Your favorite thing, Lindsay.
Yeah.
Antimacassar.
I love or hate those. Whichever is appropriate.
Mr. White took the paw from his pocket and eyed it dubiously. I don't know what to wish for, and that's a fact, he said slowly.
That's a rock fact.
Oh my God. It seems to me I've got all I want. If you only cleared the house, you'd be quite happy, wouldn't you? Said Herbert with his hand on his
shoulder.
These
like sly little chuckles at each other have got to stop.
No, I know.
I am over this family.
I hate them.
I liked
so much.
Them at first with the like cute little chest bit.
Yeah.
But now they're like, you may as well do this, or you may as well. Could you ever? And we won't.
They're reminding me so much of like the family at the beginning of a Fear Street book.
Yeah.
Like just two, like, oh, well, you're this and I'm that.
Joshing.
Well, wish for 200 pounds then. That'll just do it. His father, smiling shamefacedly at his own credulity, held up the talisman. As his son, with a solemn face, somewhat marred by a wink at his mother, sat down and struck a few impressive chords. I wish for 200 pounds, said the old man distinctly. A fine crash from the piano greeted his words, interrupted by a shuddering cry from the old man. His wife and son ran toward him. It moved, he cried, with a glance of disgust at the object as it lay on the floor. As I wished, it twisted in my hand like a snake. Well, I don't see the money, said his son.
Shut up.
I know. You don't have to respond to everything.
Shut up.
Like, you can literally just be like, oh. As he picked it up and placed it on the table. And I bet I never shall. It must have been your fancy, Father, said his wife, regarding him anxiously. He shook his head. Never mind, though. There's no harm done, but it gave me a shock all the same. They sat down by the fire again while the two men finished their pipes. Outside, why is the son living at home?
Because no woman will have him.
Correct. Outside, the wind was higher than ever, and the old man stared nervously at the sound of a door banging upstairs. A silence unusual and depressing settled on all three, which lasted until the old couple rose to retire for the rest of the night. I expect you'll find the cash tied up in a big bag in the middle of your bed, said Herbert.
Oh my God. Fucking.
Herbert, stop. Just say goodnight.
Kill me. Stop it.
Just say goodnight.
Stop being so fucking cute.
And something horrible squatting on top of your wardrobe.
Shut up.
Watching you as you pocket your ill-gotten gains.
Nobody fucking asked you.
He sat alone in the darkness, gazing at the dying fire and seeing faces in it. The last was so horrible and so simian that he gazed at it in amazement. It got so vivid that with a little uneasy laugh, he felt on the table for the glass containing a little water to throw over it. His hand grasped the monkey's paw.
Ew.
And with a little shiver, he wiped his hand on his coat and went up to bed. In the brightness of the wintry sun next morning, as it streamed over the breakfast table, he laughed at his fears. There is an air of prosaic wholesomeness about the room that it had lacked on the previous night, and the dirty, shriveled little paw was pitched on the sideboard with a carelessness which betokened no great belief in its virtues. I suppose all soldiers are the same, said Mrs. White. The idea of our listening to such nonsense.
Oh my God. We get it. You don't believe it's real, and you're making cute little jokes. We should be past this point in the story.
How could wishes be granted these days?
Yeah.
And if they could, how could 200 pounds hurt you, Father?
Might drop on his head from the sky, said the frivolous Herbert.
Funny.
Morris said that things happened so naturally that his father, that you might, if you so wished, attribute it to coincidence.
No.
Well, don't break into the money before I come back,
said Herbert as he rose from the table.
That's funny.
I'm afraid it'll turn you into a mean, avaricious man and we'll have to disown you.
Yeah, imagine that. Can you even?
That whole thing
can't even.
Is what the mom is doing the whole time.
His mother laughed and followed him to the door, washed him down the road, and returning to the breakfast table, was very happy at the expense of her husband's credulity, all of which did not prevent her from scurrying to the door at the postman's knock, nor prevent her from referring somewhat shortly to a retired sergeant major's of bibulous habits when she found that the post brought a tailor's bill. Herbert will have some more of his funny remarks, I expect, when he comes home, she said as they sat at dinner.
Edwin comes charging in.
I dare say, said Mr. White, pouring himself out some beer. But for all that, the thing moved in my hand. That I'll swear to.
Okay. Jesus Christ, these fucking people.
You thought it did, said the old lady soothingly. I say it did, replied the other. There was no thought about it. I had just... What's the matter? His wife made no reply. She was watching the mysterious movements of a man outside, who, peering in an undecided fashion at the house, appeared to be trying to make up his mind to enter. In mental connection with the £200, she noticed that the stranger was well-dressed.
Oh my God!
And wore a silk hat of glossy newness.
Glossy newness?
Glossy newness.
Oh my God, I love that.
Three times hashtag he paused at the gate and then walked on again.
Oh my God, what is he doing?
The fourth time he stood with his hand upon it and then with sudden resolution flung it open and walked up the path. Mrs. White was at the same moment, placed her hands behind her and hurriedly unfastening the strings of her apron, put that useful article of apparel beneath the cushion of her chair.
Hilarious. So useful.
Oh,
so
useful.
Funny.
Apparel. She brought the stranger, who seemed ill at ease, into the room. He gazed at her furtively and listened in a preoccupied fashion as the old lady apologized for the appearance of the room and her husband's coat, a garment which he usually reserved for the garden. She then waited as patiently.
Rude.
Oh, fuck off, Pitbull.
What is it? What is it? Dale.
She then waited as patiently as her sex would permit for him to broach his business.
WW, I see why your wife hated you.
From one socialist feminist to another, I understand her plight.
Absolutely.
But he was at first strangely silent. I was asked to call, he said at last, and stooped and picked a piece of cotton from his trousers. I come from Ma and Megan's. The old lady started. Is anything the matter? She asked breathlessly. Has anything happened to Herbert? What is it? What is it? Her husband interposed. There, there, mother, he said hastily. Sit down and don't jump to conclusions. You've not brought bad news, I'm sure, sir, and eyed the other wistfully. I'm sorry, began the visitor. Is he hurt? Demanded the mother wildly.
Get to the point.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
The visitor bowed in assent. Badly hurt, he said quietly.
Ha ha.
But he is not in any pain. Oh, thank God, said the old woman, clasping her hands. Thank God for that. She broke off as the sinister meaning of the assurance dawned on her.
Yeah, she's
and she
dumb.
Saw the awful confirmation of her fears in the other's averted face. She caught her breath and turning her slow... She caught her breath and turning to her slower-witted husband...
Nice.
...laid her trembling hand on his. There was a long silence. He was caught in the machinery. Said the visitor at length in a low voice. Ow, that's painful.
Yikes.
Caught in the machinery, repeated Mr. White in a dazed fashion. Yes. He sat staring out the window and taking his wife's hand between his own, pressed it as he had been wont to do in their old courting days nearly 40 years before. He was the only one left to us, he said, turning gently to the visitor. It is hard. The other coughed and rising, walked slowly to the window. The firm wishes me to convey their sincere sympathy with you and your great loss, he said without looking round. I beg that you will understand I am only their servant and merely obeying orders. There was no reply. The woman's face was white, her eyes staring, and her breath inaudible. On the husband's face was a look such as his friend the sergeant might have carried into his first action. I was to say that Ma and Megan's disclaim all responsibility, continued the other. They admit no liability at all, but in consideration for your son's services, they wish to present you with a certain sum as compensation. Oh,
ooh,
I wonder what
shit.
That's going to be.
This
am I right,
like,
Herbert?
Yeah,
you fucking
pounds.
Cheeky little shit.
This is back in the day when they didn't have like unions and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So this is.
They could do whatever they wanted.
This is reminding me of this book that I haven't finished yet called The Tea Rose, I think. And it's like
about like this character's dad is like trying to unionize,
mm-hmm.
and then they like kill him in an accident,
mm-hmm.
and then give the family like 10 pounds and then like dodge them every chance, and then they're so poor and they have to live in like a shithole that like half the family just dies from like illness, and then it's just down to like one character who's like trying to. It's very sad.
Are you reading this currently?
Yeah, but it's also a romance. No, I'm not. Actually, I haven't read it for like 4 months. I haven't looked at it.
Okay. So it's like you said you were feeling depressed. Maybe don't read
maybe
this for a bit.
Something horrifyingly sad. No, but it's also a romance. I was reading it like months ago.
Oh, okay.
And then kind of forgot I was reading it.
Mm-hmm. Well,
until right now.
We'll know what that's like again after our new Supreme Court justice gets put on the
yeah.
bench.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. White dropped his wife's hand and, rising to his feet, gazed with a look of horror at his visitor. His dry lips shaped the words, "How much?" 200 pounds was the answer.
And some chapstick for those dry lips.
Unconscious of his wife's shriek, the old man smiled faintly, put out his hands like a sightless man, and dropped a senseless heap to the floor. Part 3. In the huge new cemetery, some 2 miles distant, the old people buried their dead and came back to the house steeped in shadows and silence. It was all over so quickly that at first they could hardly realize it, and remained in a state of expectation as though something else to happen, something else which was to lighten the load, too heavy for old hearts to bear. But the days passed, and expectations gave way to resignation, the hopeless resignation of the old, sometimes miscalled apathy. Sometimes they hardly exchanged a word, for now they had nothing to talk about, and their days were long to weariness.
Oh man, this is a bummer.
Mm-hmm. Remember all that fun chess playing and joking?
I know.
It was annoying.
You know what?
But
I wouldn't go back.
Yeah, me neither. It was about a week after that the old man, waking suddenly in the night, stretched out his hand and found himself alone. The room was in darkness, and the sound of subdued weeping came from the window.
Oh, man.
He raised himself in bed and listened. "Come back," he said tenderly. "You will be cold." "It is colder for my son," said the old woman, and wept afresh.
Oh, true.
The sounds of her sobs died away on his ears. The bed was warm and his eyes heavy with sleep. He dozed fitfully and then slept until a sudden wild cry from his wife awoke him with a start. "The paw!" she cried wildly. "The monkey's paw!"
Yeah.
He started up in alarm. "Where? Where is it? What's the matter?" She came stumbling across the room toward him. "I want it," she said quietly. "You've not destroyed it?" "It's in the parlor, on the bracket," he replied, marveling. "Why?" She cried and laughed together, and bending over, kissed his cheek. "I only just thought of it," she said hysterically. "Why didn't I think of it before? Why didn't you think of it?" "Think of what?" he questioned. "The other 2 wishes," she replied rapidly. "We've only had one." "Was not that enough?" he demanded fiercely. "No," she cried triumphantly. "We'll have one more. Go down and get it quickly and wish our boy alive again."
"No."
The man sat in bed and flung the bedclothes from his quaking limbs. "Good God, you are mad," he cried aghast. "Get it," she panted. "Get it quickly and wish. Oh, my boy, my boy.
My boy.
My boy."
This is like the first episode of Twin Peaks where they're all like, "Ah!" Laura Palmer.
Just the whole town.
The whole town. The entire town is like, "Laura Palmer." This is just in a house.
Just the one.
Just the one.
Just the one.
I mean, here's the thing. You could like really specifically wish for the sun to be back if you like do it in like a really long sentence.
Yeah, if you write your wishes out.
Yeah, and you like think about it a lot.
You could at least protect yourself.
Yeah.
Although it does suck because he made a sensible wish.
200 pounds?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was pretty sensible.
It was.
It could have come to him in a different way.
Sure. Like a distant relative dies or something. Or yeah. Like you find it. Or you
or
find
guess
someone's
it wants
dog.
To do the meanest thing. Because if he said he cursed it with magic so that it would show men who like try to like
fuck with fate.
Fuck with fate.
Does that mean it was not in his fate to get 200 pounds in his whole life? That's sad.
I guess all at once and right then.
Yeah.
Also, I don't know how much 200 pounds translates to.
No idea. 200 pounds in 1902 money.
$2 million.
In that case?
Mm-hmm.
Stop.
Do it. You wish that boy dead.
Her husband struck a match and lit the candle. "Get back to bed," he said unsteadily. "You don't know what you are saying." "We had the first wish granted," said the old woman feverishly. "Why not the second?" "A coincidence," stammered the old man. "Go get it and wish," cried his wife, quivering with excitement.
"Why doesn't she do it?"
The one person has to do all the wishes.
So before you can reset and do someone else?
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't work for women.
Oh.
That's what it
that's
is.
That's it. That's it.
Because they know not to wish for things.
Yeah.
Because they don't get anything.
Because we know not to expect anything out of life. And so we can't. We literally were unable to say the words. I wish for something for myself.
Can't do it.
Like, I was able to say that, but if I wanted to say an actual wish.
Right.
Like, watch. See.
Couldn't do it.
I couldn't do it.
She couldn't do it. She couldn't do it.
Everyone, so you know, podcast is a visual medium.
Everyone. Lindsay couldn't do it.
The old man turned and regarded her, and his voice shook. "He has been dead 10 days, and besides, I would not tell you else, but I could only recognize him by his clothing. If he was too terrible you to see, then how now?" Because he got bitten up by machines.
Yeah, he got sucked into a machine.
Mm-hmm, that's horrible.
Oh my God, nightmare.
"Bring him back," cried the old woman and dragged him towards the door. "Do you think I fear the child I have nursed?"
When
it's a mangled up mush pot.
"If your son looks like a chicken pot pie," that's not your son anymore.
Do not subscribe.
Hashtag unfollow.
Hashtag unfollow, unfriend. He went down in the darkness and felt his way to the parlor and then to the mantelpiece. The talisman was in its place, and a horrible fear that the unspoken wish might bring his mutilated son before him ere he could escape from the room seized up on him, and he caught his breath as he found that he had lost the direction of the door. His brow cold with sweat, he felt his way around the table and groped along the wall until he found himself in the small passage with the unwholesome thing in his hand. Even his wife's face seemed changed as he entered the room. It was white and expectant, and to his fear seemed to have an unnatural look upon it. He was afraid of her.
Yeah.
"Wish," she cried in a strong voice.
"Yikes.
It is foolish and wicked," he faltered. "Wish," repeated his wife. He raised his hand. "I wish my son alive again." The talisman fell to the floor, and he regarded it fearfully. Then he sank trembling into a chair as the old woman, with burning eyes, walked to the window and raised the blind. He sat until he was chilled with the cold, glancing occasionally at the figure of the old woman peering through the window. The candle end, which had burned below the rim of the china candlestick, was throwing pulsating shadows on the ceiling and walls, until with a flicker larger than the rest, it expired. The old man, with an unspeakable sense of relief at the failure of the talisman. Why would you think that?
Why did you think that? It took a while for the counts to come.
Yeah, it took me like a whole day for him to die. Crept back to his bed, and a minute afterward, the old woman came silently and apathetically beside him. Neither spoke, but lay silently listening to the ticking of the clock. A stair creaked, and a squeaky mouse scurried noisily through the wall. The darkness was oppressive, and after lying for some time, screwing up his courage, he took the box of matches and, striking one, went downstairs for a candle. At the foot of the stairs, the match went out, and he paused to strike another, and at the same moment, a knock came so quiet and stealthily as to be scarcely audible, sounded on the front door.
Knock, knock, motherfucker.
Like a ghost story.
Oh my God. It was a hook.
The call was coming from inside the house. The matches fell from his hand and spilled in the passage. He stood motionless, his breath suspended until the knock was repeated. Then he turned and fled swiftly back to his room and closed the door behind him. The third knock sounded through the house.
Oh my God, no.
"What's that?" cried the old woman, starting up. "A rat," the old man said in shaking tones. "A rat. It passed me on the stairs and
also
then it knocked on the door." "Then it knocked on the door twice and I ran."
Oh my God.
His wife sat up in bed listening. A loud knock resounded through the house. "It's Herbert." She ran to the door, but her husband was before her, and catching her by the arm, held her tightly. "What are you going to do?" he whispered hoarsely. "It's my boy. It's Herbert," she cried, struggling mechanically. "I forgot it was 2 miles away. What are you holding me for? Let go. I must open the door." "For God's sake, don't let it in," cried the old man, trembling. "You're afraid of your son," she cried, struggling. "Let me go. I'm coming, Herbert. I'm coming." There was another knock and another. The old woman with a sudden wrench broke free and ran from the room. Her husband followed to the landing and called after her appealingly as she hurried downstairs. He heard the chain rattle back and the bolt drawn slowly and stiffly from the socket. Then the old woman's voice, strained and panting. "The bolt!" she cried loudly. "Come down! I can't reach it!" But her husband was on his hands and knees, groping wildly on the floor in search of the paw.
She can't reach.
If only he could find it before the thing outside got in. A perfect fusillade of knocks, I don't know, reverberated through the house, and he heard the scraping of a chair as his wife put it down in the passage against the door. He heard the creaking of the bolt as it came slowly back, and at the same moment he found the monkey's paw and frantically breathed his third and last wish. The knocking ceased suddenly, although the echoes of it were still in the house. He heard the chair drawn back, and the door opened. A cold wind rushed up the staircase, and a long, loud wail of disappointment and misery from his wife gave him the courage to run down to her side, and then to the gate beyond. The street lamp flickering opposite shone on a quiet and deserted road.
Oh, this is exactly, or I should say the episode of Buffy is exactly like
it
that.
It is exactly like that.
But I love the twist in that one, though, where it's like Buffy is the one saying to...
Yeah.
To Dawn, like, don't, you shouldn't have done this. You shouldn't have done this. And then
Dawn's the one who has to destroy it.
And Buffy's the one who runs to the door.
It's so and is like, Mommy. Sad. And then them sobbing together at the end with the door open.
What a good show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, man. Well, okay. So I'm glad that the son is still dead.
Yeah, we didn't like him.
We didn't like him. I think the parents
We're
have learned.
We're pro-death of people we don't like.
Yes.
If you know anything about us.
Yeah.
You know that we're petty, horrible people.
Yeah, if you slightly bother me...
Mm-hmm. I wish you dead.
Off with your head.
I wish you dead.
Off with your head. Wow.
I didn't expect it to be that much of a story with a beginning, middle, and end. I thought it was just going to be, and then this bad wish happened.
Yeah.
And then this bad wish happened, which I both like and dislike, because I just wanted to hear more bad wishes.
I wanted them to experience more bad things. That was a really long yawn. No, I wanted to experience more bad things. But I mean, I guess they experienced...
Smart to use the last wish to undo
it. I mean, you have to. But isn't that interesting that the paw let them do that?
It is, but it's almost like the paw went, yes, this is how fate works.
Be. Yeah. Wow.
You did right by undoing your... attempt to control fate.
How dare you attempt to control fate?
Who dare disturb my slumber?
Cool. Great pick, Brett. Thumbs up.
Good work, Brett.
Good work, Brett.
Hashtag good work, Brett.
Hashtag good work, Brett. I think maybe we should put that on something.
Yeah.
Hashtag good work, Brett.
Like
we could put it on a little, like,
put it on a tweet
on a little sailor hat, and then he can wear it. Is that mean?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Well, great. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Public Domain Theater. We have like no business to take care of. On
we don't
this
have
podcast.
Any business. I mean, I guess you could follow our podcast.
Follow the podcast on social media.
Mm-hmm. At Public Domain Pod.
And on Facebook.
Yeah, find our Facebook page.
Yeah. And our Facebook group that I'm going to start when we stop recording.
Great.
Yeah.
We're busy people.
Mm-hmm.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for listening. And keep it lit.
Forever Dog.
This has been a Forever Dog production. Executive produced by Brett Boehm, Joe Cilio, and Alex Ramsey. For more original podcasts, please visit ForeverDogPodcasts.com and subscribe to our shows on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Keep up with the latest Forever Dog news by following us on Twitter and Instagram @ForeverDogTeam and liking our page on Facebook.